Now, I'm delighted once again to be joined by Mike Davis from the Radio Town Museum. But this week, unlike last time, we were talking about Tudor Christmases. It's not quite so bright, is it, Mike?
No, indeed. Hello, Scott. Lovely to see you again. Yes.
So what are we going to talk about? Religious martyrs, particularly of Essex, which, as we say, is a pretty horrendous subject. Now, before Christmas, as we were saying, we talked about Tudor Christmases, but living in Tudor times, anything connected with religious beliefs, even the way you thought about the forms of religious worship, was a bit of a tinderbox, was it not? So perhaps you can give us a bit of background.
Absolutely, Scott, indeed. Things had a way of changing very rapidly. One minute, everything would be absolutely fine and no problems whatsoever. In an instant, things would change quite dramatically.
Now, not being renowned for being politically correct, I probably wouldn't have lasted 5 minutes, so you better tell me more.
OK, well, the story really starts at the start of the 16th century, when Britain was a largely Catholic country and Protestants were in a minority. But everything got stirred up in 1527 when the Pope refused to allow Henry VIII to divorce his first wife, Catherine of Aragon, so that he could marry Anne Boleyn. As a result of this, laws were passed abolishing papal authority in England and declaring Henry as the head of the Church of England. But Henry had to rely on Protestants to implement the religious agenda. Theology became markedly Protestant, especially during the brief reign of Henry's son, Edward VI, who died at the tender age of just 15 in 1553. But all that changed when Mary took the crown.
In 1553?
Yes.
And we're talking about Bloody Mary here, are we not?
Indeed. She's known as Bloody Mary, but she was also known as Mary Tudor, and for a while she was also Queen of Spain. Mary immediately took steps to restore the relationship between the Church of England and Rome and repealed all the religious legislation passed under Edward VI. Protestants now faced a choice of exile, conversion, or punishment by being burnt at the stake. Originally, it had been expected that the likely targets would be restricted to high-level clergy, but in time, victims included tradesmen, family, youths, and at least one couple were burned alive with their daughter. It is understood that in the region of 300 people were either burnt at the stake, there was about 15 who were sent to the gallows.
So do you have any idea of the number of Essex people who fell foul of these events?
Indeed. Well, there was a significant number of Essex people who were affected, including various towns such as Brentwood, Braintree, Malden, Thundersley, Horndon-on-the-Hill, Billericay, Colchester, Chelmsford, Coggeshall, and of course we must mention Rayleigh, as well as Saffron Walden, and also a mention for Stratford, which of course in those times was actually in Essex.
Mm. And right here in Brentwood, there was a guy here that got
burnt. As I drove in today, Scott, I noticed the obelisk at the top of Wilson's Corner for 19-year-old William Hunter, who'd lost his job in London because he refused to attend the Catholic Mass. And after returning to Brentwood, he was also caught reading the Bible in the chapel at Brentwood. He was taken before Anthony Brown, then the local justice, but later to become the Chief Justice of the Common Pleas, but he refused to retract his position. Hunter was then sent to the notorious Bishop Bonner in London, where he resisted both threats and bribes. Indeed, Bonner offered to make him a freeman of the City of London and offered to give him £40, a significant sum of money in those days, but was eventually returned to Brentwood to be burnt. He was, in actual fact, the first Essex martyr of the reign of Mary Tudor. Rayleigh martyrs are remembered in the memorial at Rayleigh to include Thomas Causton, John Ardley, Robert Drakes and William Tins. A John Simpson was also burnt at the stake in Rochford in 1555. Curiously, though, there is a strange story about a George Eagles, who was, in actual fact, hung, drawn and quartered in Chelmsford in August 1557. He was hung initially with two other criminals, but amazingly, initially he survived, but then he was brought down, his head was cut off, and his heart cut into four pieces, hung, drawn and quartered, with one sent to Colchester, one to Harwich, one to St Osyth, and the other in Chelmsford, all on public display to tell the locals you better behave or else.
Charming. Now, I have to say, if I had been this young guy, William Hunter, I'd have taken the bribe, you know, 40 quid and not been burnt, but there you are. Now, I know that before Mary came to the throne, one of the few clerics who was against the burning of heretics, even obstinate ones, approached the then royal chaplain and Protestant preacher John Rogers in an effort to get him to intervene in the case of a woman sentenced to be sent to the stake. But he was rebuffed by Rogers, who is said to have claimed that the method of execution was sufficiently mild for a crime as grave as that as heresy. And then I understand that after Mary's accession, Rogers himself was burnt as a heretic. Oh, dear. Now, I think perhaps we should mention that it was not only Protestants who suffered during these turbulent times.
Indeed, Scott. Just getting back to John Rogers for a moment, if that was a mild punishment, I hate to think what a terrible punishment was. John Rogers was, in actual fact, burnt on the 4th of February 1555 at Smithfield. There is a drawing in what I consider to be the definitive book on the martyrs, Fox's Book of Martyrs, and he does, in actual fact, have a blue plaque in his hometown of Birmingham to commemorate his martyrdom. But it's indeed true to say that between the years 1534 and 1680, a large number of Catholics were executed for treason as a consequence of the English Reformation, which was probably not helped by the decision by the Pope in 1570 to excommunicate Elizabeth I, demanding that all Catholics must rebel against the English crown. This demand resulted in legislation being introduced in Parliament here in 1571, making it treasonable for anybody to remain a Catholic or harbour a Catholic priest. Failure to comply was punishable by execution by being hung, drawn and quartered.
Well, perhaps that's your answer, being hung, drawn and quartered. I'm not sure if that's worse than just being burnt, but it doesn't sound too promising either way. Anyway, perhaps we can now return to your home turf and to look at the Martyrs Memorial, which is right outside your museum. When was that erected?
Absolutely. Well, it was in actual fact erected, and it won't surprise you, Scott, to know that full details can be found in the Rayleigh Town Museum, which is open on a Wednesday, Friday and a Saturday between 10 and 4. But at the beginning of the 20th century, three local Protestants got together and said that this was such a significant part of our town's history that they ought to really commemorate this by erecting a plaque, a small bronze tablet. Very soon, they'd raised just over £85 and realised that in 1908, this was far too much for a plaque, but was enough for an obelisk. And a local committee got together, arranged it all, and it was unveiled on the 23rd of September 1908 at 2:30 in the afternoon, unveiled in front of a large crowd in Rayleigh with a local Liberal Democrat Member of Parliament, Roland Whitehead, officiating. And we've got various photos in our archives in the museum. There were in actual fact four martyrs commemorated. Two were burnt at the stake in Rayleigh, on or near this site. Thomas Colston, who was a Thundersley resident, he was burnt on the 26th of March 1555, followed on the 10th of June 1555 by somebody called John Ardley, who was a resident of Great Wigborough. Also on the obelisk are two people who were burnt at Smithfield. Robert Drakes, who was a local vicar in Thundersley, he was burnt on the 14th of April 1556, at the same day that William Timms, who was the Hockley curate, was also burnt. All four are commemorated at Rayleigh. In actual fact, Scott, there is still ceremonies held to this day annually in May. And if I was to mention that a few years ago, the main person who led the religious service was a certain Reverend Ian Paisley.
Incredible.
But nobody knew about that until the following day, because you can understand that that wouldn't have gone down too well.
Well, maybe not. Anyway, is there anything else you'd like to add to this somewhat macabre and grim story?
On a slightly lighter note, Scott, if I can, to finish off with, I think most people know of a cocktail called a Bloody Mary.
Indeed.
And there are sort of some conflicting stories, as you find in a lot of history. Some stories suggest that Bloody Mary was named after, actually, Mary Tudor, whereas others say that it actually was started in a saloon bar in Chicago called the Bucket of Blood by a server whose name was Mary. As I say, others said it was claimed from the Queen Mary, the Tudor of England, but no one knows for sure. But in America, at least, as prohibition waned, the drink took off and the name just got stuck.
Bucket of Blood pales into insignificance, I guess.
Absolutely.
Anyway, you mentioned a few moments ago this Fox's Book of Martyrs.
Yes.
There's another book as well. And I'm guessing that you've got them in the museum. Is that right?
Scott, it wouldn't surprise you to know, yes, there's a book that concentrates specifically on the Essex Martyrs.
Yeah.
It's taken directly from Fox's Book of Martyrs, but it just concentrates just on the Essex ones. Fascinating, gruesome story of our historic county.
And you're going to tell me what events you've got coming up in the museum.
That's very kind of you to remind me, Scott. I nearly forgot about that.
I can't believe that.
Well, coming up fairly soon, we've got a very small railway exhibition, which is always popular. People love the history of the railway and the significance it had with our town. On the 17th of March, we've got a lovely, fascinating talk on the photographs of somebody called Edward Francis. There's a Hockley historian doing that for us, Paul Taylor. Edward Francis lived in what is called Edward Francis House, Lloyd's Bank. He was an excavator of Rayleigh Mount, the castle, and did a lot of excavation work. We then got a pictorial history of Rayleigh. It goes without saying, in April, we're going to commemorate the Essex connection with the RMS Titanic, something I hold quite dear to my heart. Uh-huh. We're doing schools exhibitions during the summer. But in September, we have quite a significant exhibition on some of the original historic maps of Essex, which has already generated a lot of excitement locally with lots of original maps of Essex, globes and atlases, and that's on in the middle of September. Then, of course, we have our annual November Remembrance commemorations, and we top it off with a celebration of Christmas.
Fantastic. All right, thanks very much indeed, Mike.